Hey and welcome back to another episode of Skillscape. I'm your host, Justin Chu. Joining me today is Ahili Wen, CEO APAC of Agorize, where she helps businesses to innovate and identify the best talent by connecting them with a global community of 5 million innovators. This is Ahili's story of grit, grind, and hustle. Enjoy! Ahili, thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule to do this. You know how excited I am to have you on this episode, so thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Justin, for having me.
Awesome. Hey, to kick things off, Ahili, could you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit more about what Agorize does?
Sure. So my name is Ahili Wen. I am the CEO for APAC at a company called Agorize. I've been with the company for 5 years and a half now, and what we are trying to achieve here on this tiny little planet is we're creating a space in which innovators who have great ideas but who are struggling to let these great ideas be known can meet with large organizations who have the firepower and the means to make these ideas and great innovations come to life. And to do so, we have built an online platform that really creates this space where great innovators meet great companies, and together we are really here to advance open innovation.
Such exciting work that you're doing, and you know how much of a fan I am of the work that you do with Agorize, right? But to give the audience a clear view before we get into the flesh of the discussion, could you talk us through the pain point that Agorize addresses and sort of the exact value proposition that you bring to the table with the company?
Yeah, so it's a great question. Agorize really came from a very simple idea in the very beginning. So the company was created by three students when they were in their final year of university. And they realized how exciting it was, you know, to take part in business case competitions. But the problem with these business case competitions is that you solve problems that are very long ago already solved, such as this marketing strategy for IBM in 1996, right? Boston Consulting Group, BCG, you know, font size 6, very, very boring kinds of case competitions. But they realized that companies keep having problems to solve. Every day, every single day, we have new challenges to face, new roadblocks. And so that's one thing. And on the other end of the spectrum, you have lots and lots of younger people, students, but also entrepreneurs, startups, and your own employees as well, who may have the answer or part of the answer to these problems. But how do we make these both of these worlds meet, right? Because they actually very rarely talk to each other. And so came this idea of creating an online platform, because the problem is also that when you do that in a physical setting, you're very limited to where and when you have these kinds of hackathons or, you know, business case competitions happening offline. You're so limited in the pool of talent you can tap into. And that's what Agorize is trying to solve, these both two problems. So how do I scale these kinds of open innovation initiatives that I want? How do I source ideas from everywhere? And also, how do I find solution finders, innovators in this vast 7 billion people world that we have?
Exactly right, Ahili. And I can totally relate to that, just being an undergraduate student myself, you know, with these case competitions so close to home. And, you know, if there's a way that really pairs together and really bridges together the immense talent and innovators, you know, with these really pressing issues, then we're able to scale positive disruption around the world, right? So again, huge fan of what Agorize does, as well as the impact that you make on the ecosystem. You know, I do want to ask though, Ahili, it's that relating to your journey as an entrepreneur, or rather an intrapreneur, right? What was your journey like, you know, taking that leap of faith to found the NA arm of the North American arm of Agorize?
Yes, you coined the term intrapreneur. So I started at Agorize 5.5 years ago in 2015 as employee number 20, 25. I don't recall the exact number, but we were very little, right? And I started as head of marketing. So I was recruited for the company to really build the marketing capabilities of the company. And that was an awesome journey of 2 years. And then after 2 years, my ex-wife came home and said, "Hey, honey, just pack your bags. We're moving to Canada." I was in shock because I really loved my job at Agorize and I really loved working in the startup environment. However, I loved my wife more, and so I chose to follow her. Absolutely. I chose to follow her to Canada. And so you're presenting in such a cool way, like, oh, you really like took a leap of faith and decided to open a new chapter. It wasn't, the real story is more like it started from a personal choice to move to another country to start a new life with my partner. But then that's when actually you cannot dissociate your personal life to your work life, I think, in general. And so when I arrived in Canada, I started just talking about what I was doing at Agorize and pitching just what Agorize was. And it turned out that there was a lot of traction. You know, people were very interested in open innovation challenges, in open innovation software. It was so new. It was a shiny, brand new toy, kind of. And I realized that we had an opportunity here. So I contacted my co-founders back in France, and I told them, hey, folks, I think we're onto something in Canada. Can you just give me 6 months so that I can try and test the Agorize? Let me try and test a go-to-market strategy in North America. And up we went. I was alone for the first 10 months. And after the 6 months period that I gave myself, I pitched, I think, 5,000 times to so many different people. You have no idea. I hustled like never before. And it became my company. It became my mission to really spread the word about open innovation in Canada. And then it really quickly turned out that in the US, there was a lot of traction too. And so after just 6 months, we already had 5 clients in Canada. And it turns out that we decided to incorporate the company, hire the first new hires, and grow the team. And that's how it started.
What an awesome story. And that story really resonates with me. And I couldn't agree more, you know, with the point that you can dissociate your personal life with your work life. And a huge factor to that is because you really believed in the mission of Agorize, which is why even though you had to leave, you know, you were driven to spread and scale that kind of purpose, even though you weren't necessarily a part of the company then. You know, but why did you want to take that kind of risk?
It was a very risky enterprise on my end because I took 95% of the risk. I quit my job in France and I was under no contract in Canada. So basically, I was back to square one, very start of my career where I was entirely commission-based. My compensation was entirely 100% compensation, bonus-based and commission-based. And so that was very little risk for the company. That was very high risk for me. So at the same time, while I was actually promoting Agorize, I had a second job as a freelance marketing manager for another startup. And that the funds and the money that I was making out of the second job actually financed my activity with Agorize.
That is such a bold move, Aurelie. And, you know, I'm sure that with such a bold move, you must have a strong defensibility around your idea, right? And so, you know, expanding into the North American market in Canada first as your foothold, right? It's such a nascent opportunity. It's such an untapped market with open innovation. How are you able to develop this project in the NA market? And you mentioned, you know, you had the first 5 clients, but how are you able to scale from there?
I think it's very important to think about the mindset before the techniques and the different channels and different things that I used. I think the most important thing to think about is the mindset that you have when you launch a brand new product on a brand new market. Nobody knows you. Nobody even actually really understands the concept of what you're selling. So that's a very niche thing that you're doing here. You have to be adamant about why you're doing this. And what I was selling was not necessarily Agorize, a product or a platform or a community, which is everything that we have, right? When you buy Agorize, you do buy your software, you buy a community of 5 million innovators worldwide, you buy project management, top-notch expertise. But at the end of the day, that's not how you should sell it, especially in North America. You have to sell a promise, you have to sell a vision, and you have to sell a concept. And the vision and the concept was that the best ideas really come from everywhere. And if you're convinced of that too, if you do, let's have a conversation. Are you convinced that the best ideas can really come from anywhere, not just from your top managers at the 42nd floor of your of your ivory tower, right? So let's start here. If we disagree right now on this, then let's stop the conversation. However, if you are convinced of that, then okay, do you know that there is a way for you to source amazing ideas from everywhere? Okay, how? And then we can talk about how. I was super fortunate because, okay, I hustled a lot. Because once, yeah, you're falling from a plane once again, and you're building another plane around you. So I think I never networked like this in my whole life before. I think I went to every networking session I could find in Montreal, in Toronto, and then later on in New York, in Washington, in San Francisco. I met with anyone who would want to meet me so that I could test my pitch, so that I could test that concept that I'm telling you about, the open innovation as a service approach. I pivoted my pitch so many times, thousands of times, because whenever I saw that people didn't understand or they were asking questions, I was pivoting my pitch again and again and again until I got this right. Until I got this right and until I had maybe a set of 12, 15 different scenarios where I could switch from scenario to scenario depending on the person I'm talking to. But I realized that when you surrender yourself to the gods of serendipity, there are amazing things happen. So I, just to give you one example, I accepted a coffee meeting with a wealth manager. Like, okay, wealth management. Well, turns out we had a very pleasant coffee meeting together, 30 minutes. 2 weeks later, he introduced me to someone from CIBC, the bank he was working for. And this person was working in innovation, right? And so I got a lead like that. So first, yeah, let network like crazy. Do not underestimate and undervalue the power of serendipity. The second thing is activate all the acquisition channels that you can. And my favorite ones are LinkedIn. I have an obsession with LinkedIn. It brought me so many clients, prospects, friends, mentors. A lot of things come through LinkedIn. But don't make the mistake that most people do. Do not sell on LinkedIn. Like, do not use LinkedIn to sell your product. Use LinkedIn to connect with people from like human to human perspective, and then let the thing move into sales or not, but be ready to really approach LinkedIn as a very casual place to connect with other professionals. The second channel I love is events, of course, where networking events. I know COVID-19 has made it very complicated, but there are lots and lots of online networking events. So these places are great to get a business started because once again, you get to pitch, you get to test your pitch over and over again with multiple people. So use them.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, there are two points that resonate with me, Aureli. The first point is that the biggest part of your success in scaling Agorize in North America is your grit, your grind, and your hustle, right? There are plenty of opportunities that are just sitting there like little rocks in the ocean. And you know, these rocks aren't going to stir themselves. It's on us to put in the hours, to put in the work, to drive things into motion and to create opportunities, right? The second point is that the power of LinkedIn, like you said, right? It's an effective channel to connect. You know, I really couldn't agree more because when you build a strong relationship and a strong connection, you know, then the sell and the ask comes later very naturally. Yeah. So the next question that I want to ask you is, you know, how has your approach been different in scaling and managing Agorize in the North American region versus with the APAC region like you just started? You know, what are some challenges that you faced and overcome? You know, what's the difference between open innovation between North America and APAC region? Talk us through that.
Sure. So it was night and day, honestly. The first thing is the level of maturity of the market, right? When it comes, I'm really talking about open innovation here, not just any kind of market. I went from North America, which is really the birthplace of all of our competitors, biggest competitors on the planet are from the US. And so I came from a highly, highly, highly competitive market to, wow, Asia, open innovation, not very well known. Pretty not that mature. And so it's a green field for us. It's a kind of a blue ocean. There are a few players already in place. But oddly, all these big US players kind of overlooked Asia and APAC. So that's a great thing because the way I have to pitch and I have to present Agorize is completely different. The way we behave as a company. Yeah, even our strategy, our sales strategy, etc. It's like working for a kind of different company as well in the approach. And yeah, the meetings that I have with people in Hong Kong, in Singapore, in Tokyo are very different as well. I would put aside Tokyo because Japan is quite advanced in innovation, but not so much in open innovation. They are super highly informed about everything that's going on and all the players. However, their culture is so risk averse that they do not jump. They do not take that leap of faith. Second is Singapore. Singapore is super, is also at a very interesting place in their journey to open innovation. Private companies are, I would say, quite immature still in the open innovation journey. However, the government is pushing so hard, is really, really playing a huge advocacy role in spreading the word about why open innovation is so important for the future of their economy, for the future of the country as a nation. They immediately saw in us a great opportunity to really advocate fiercely about open innovation. So basically connecting the best companies, the Singaporean companies, with the best startups out there. And that's what we've been doing for the past 3 years with them. Despite COVID-19, they decided to invest money into open innovation initiatives. And lastly, Hong Kong. So Hong Kong is a little bit more complex because there's a lot of talk about innovation and how companies innovate. However, there is an expression that we call innovation theater. And I hate to say that, but it's true that there is a lot of innovation theater happening in Hong Kong. So you will have companies who have a lot of financial, they have a lot of money, okay? Their firepower has not been so diminished. So financial sector is super strong. They have all the cards in hand to really do real innovation, but they don't. They say they do, but they actually, in actuality, they do not. And that was, to me, very, very surprising. And actually, when I arrived there 7 months ago, I realized that there was a lot of things that were kind of stagnating. We've been very successful in really catering for the most innovative, risk-taking companies in Hong Kong. But the core, like the conglomerates, the family businesses, and all these big, 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 big groups that really are the predominant economy in Hong Kong and drive the economy in Hong Kong, it's been quite hard for us to convince them of the value of open innovation. Not just innovation, but open innovation. And I think we're a little bit too in advance for these conglomerates and big, big, big groups, because there's a huge cultural gap that we need to face. So it's not even when we talk to them, it's not even about why you should use open innovation, it's why we should innovate.
Yeah, you're totally right, Aurelie, and you really capture that sentiment that a lot of people in Hong Kong feel, right? I was just talking to Henry Arslanian the other week, and he was sharing with me very candidly, like you did, all of the performative innovation that is going on here, just throwing on some innovation shirts and being like, oh, that's it. That's, innovation. That's open innovation. We know that this theater is quite rife in Hong Kong, and it comes down to the culture, that we're breeding here. Are we willing to step out of our comfort zone to bring a real change to the table? Or are we comfortable just staying in the present? I don't think that's right. And I'm sure this doesn't sit well with you either. And also like the point that you brought up with, about Singapore and their willingness to innovate, even through difficulty, like allocating a portion of their national expenditure towards open innovation projects. I think it speaks a lot about their willingness to really be continuously better, right? And to continuously innovate around the region. And there's so much to talk about, within this topic, but I do want to steer the conversation to something that I know holds dear to your heart and that I enjoy speaking about as well, right? And that is diversity and inclusion in tech and entrepreneurship. I want to ask you very candidly what your thoughts are on this topic in Hong Kong, where we sit.
Diversity and inclusion are definitely is a huge, huge part of what I believe in. And that really blossomed during my 3 years in North America. I was like literally working in between, at some point between Montreal and San Francisco. And a few people know this, but both of these cities are very, very advanced in terms of, we know San Francisco for sure, because, it's a city of love, right? But Montreal is actually very well advanced in everything regarding diversity and inclusion, feminism, equality, etc. And socially speaking, they're on par, definitely. And that's where I realized that this topic was so important and so vital, especially from being a female, a lesbian entrepreneur in tech and everything, you know. And when I arrived in Hong Kong, it was very interesting to to notice that it was a bit more conservative. I know that this is not, for example, being completely out about your sexuality is quite rare. And when I arrived, and this is something that I'm so comfortable talking about. And some people actually came to me and said, you know, you shouldn't really talk about this, or, you know, you get that kind of remarks. And that was very surprising to me. Another thing is the topic of diversity and inclusion within corporations is quite rare. You see lots and lots of big corporations already having D&I teams, or at least having a D&I chapter in their CSR report, or, you know, just something very, very simple. But during Pride Month that we have every June in North America, lots and lots of corporations are sponsoring, being super visible and very, very candid and open, and changing their logos into the rainbow logo, having people during the Pride March, etc. Here in Hong Kong, this is not the case. I only encountered one D&I team from a conglomerate, but apart from that, I think this topic is still very, very, we're very shy in Hong Kong again about that.
No, exactly. And I think that warrants a lot of change, right? And so maybe, like, what are some tangible steps that you think that, you know, we can take in Hong Kong to make sure that we build inclusive workplaces and very inclusive company cultures?
I think safety, mental safety is super important. I mean, the problem is in any, and I'm not pointing at Hong Kong or anyone, it's in any organization, when you feel unsafe to speak up and really not only just speaking about your own personal life, but also about your ideas, and you don't feel comfortable because you feel like you may risk to lose your job, then it's not safe. It's not psychologically safe. I think the first step you can take as a company is to say, hey, it's okay to disagree. It's okay to have an opinion that is different from everyone else's. It's okay to be yourself at work. And it's okay to really bring your really own true self at work. And I think both go hand in hand, because the more comfortable you will be to really show up as yourself at work, the more comfortable you will be in sharing your true ideas and what you really think. If your manager has said something to go into that direction and you really think it's a bad idea, but you don't feel safe speaking up, then, you know, you will just stand by and watch, and you knew that this was a bad idea. And this is how you create, at a very large scale, companies that fail because of the status quo, because we value tenure over the quality of ideas, because we value management over non-management and all these things. This is, I think I have identified these as maybe some of the problems that we can face in Hong Kong corporate world. So first, create a safe space. And have your managers and your leaders show the way. And that requires a lot of humility, and that requires a lot of vulnerability. And that's the hardest step to take. Because when your whole life you've been taught that, I don't know, crying or saying I don't know or speaking up your doubts is a sign of weakness, how can you actually teach your own employees that it's okay to say you don't know, to say that, you know, you don't have all the answers and you're in doubt?
Totally right. Totally right, Aurelia. And you know what? It takes strong leadership and managerial choices to build, you know, a diverse and inclusive culture, right? Because you're setting a very strong example for, you know, your employees to really adhere to. And, you know, with a focus, like you said, on safety and that comfort in speaking up, even against, you know, tenure or management, right? I do want to end things off by giving you, really an explanation on the title of the podcast, right? Skillscape. When we break the title down, skill and scape, you know, intrinsic to building a company and scaling the company, right? We need to take into account the landscape of things, the bigger picture, right? And that includes the product market fit, the geography, the sector, the timing, the place, you know, and little things like that. The list goes on. What is one tip that you can give to founders to scalescape their companies towards success?
Well, that's a great question. People buy from people, okay? So as a founder of a company, you will be in, you will be selling everything all the time. If you do not understand that right away, you're in trouble. And especially, I know, I don't know, for some reason, some a lot of people just think that sales is a dirty word. you will be selling not only the concept of your company, but also yourself as a person. And so that requires, the one advice that I would give you is really just do that introspection, be self-aware of what is your strong suit, what are your shortcomings, and pitch yourself in a very, very authentic way. When you start a business, you want to say yes to everything. You want to say, yes, we can do it. Yes, we can do it. You overpromise, you underdeliver. Don't fall into that trap. Say very clearly, since you know, you have done that work of knowing yourself, where you're strong at, where you're not so strong at, it reflects on your company as well. This is what my company is very good at doing. This is not what we do. And so when you pitch and you sell yourself, it's much more compelling to someone, to a potential buyer, to hear someone saying, I can do A, B, I cannot do C. Instead of saying, yeah, I can do A, B, C, D, E, F until Z if you want. I can do everything. Just trust us. That is very scary for a buyer. So, yeah.
Such a great tip to end things on, Aureli. Thank you so much for your time. I had such a great discussion with you today, and I'm sure that, you know, our listeners will really enjoy this episode as well. So thank you so much for taking the time to do this, Aureli. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Justin. Yeah, likewise, Justin. It's a great podcast, and thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Skillscape. If you like this content, check out Skillscape on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. I'd love to hear your thoughts and to connect with you. I'll see you next week.